All right, let's dive into some organic chemistry. So you sent in a chapter all about nucleophilic reactions, and we're going to decode it together.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and don't worry, this isn't like a pop quiz or anything like
No
that.
exams here.
No, think of it like by the end of this, you'll know the secret recipe behind Splenda.
Ah,
Yeah,
Splenda.
that Splenda, that artificial sweetener.
It's amazing how much chemistry we encounter every day without even realizing it.
Absolutely. Okay, so the chapter talks about alkyl halides, and those are molecules with a halogen atom, like
What?
chlorine or bromine, hanging out with a carbon atom.
And that pairing is crucial because that carbon-halogen bond,
Okay.
it's really the key that opens up a whole world of reactions.
Interesting.
Alkyl halides are so versatile, we see them in solvents like acetone,
Okay.
like nail polish remover.
Oh, wow.
They're also the kind of the starting materials for making many other compounds.
Wait, so that bottle of nail polish remover I use,
Yeah.
that's an alkyl halide in disguise.
Yeah, just
That's really cool. Okay, so these alkyl halides, they're ready to react, but what makes them so special?
well, the halogens, they're kind of electron hogs.
Okay.
They're pulling electrons away from that carbon atom, making the carbon a little bit electron deficient.
Ah, I see.
And that sets the stage for a nucleophile to come in and sort of shake things up a bit.
Nucleophile, that sounds
It's
intense.
simpler than it sounds.
Okay.
A nucleophile, it's just a molecule that has some extra electrons and it's willing to share.
Got it.
It's kind of like a friendly neighbor, with an extra cup of sugar.
Right.
Always ready to lend a helping hand, or in this case, an electron pair.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
Okay, so the halogen, the electron hog, makes the carbon a target.
Yeah.
And then this friendly nucleophile comes in with its extra electrons ready to bond, and that's what we call a nucleophilic substitution reaction.
Exactly. You got it.
Okay.
And your chapter focuses on two main ways that this substitution can happen: SN1 and SN2 reactions.
Okay, SN1, SN2.
Yeah, they sound a bit like secret codes.
Yeah, a little bit.
But really, they're just describing this step-by-step process of how these molecules rearrange themselves.
Okay, so two different dances, but both involve a nucleophile swapping places with the halogen on the alkyl halide.
Exactly. It's like a choreography of bonds breaking and bonds forming.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So in an SN2 reaction, the nucleophile comes in for a direct attack, kicking out the halogen in one swift move.
Okay.
It's kind of like a tag team wrestling match,
Yeah.
One partner comes in from behind while the other one gets thrown out of the ring.
Got it. And what about SN1? Is that a more complicated move?
Yeah, a bit more intricate.
Okay.
In an SN1 reaction, the halogen kind of leaves first on its own,
Okay.
and that leaves behind this positively charged carbon atom called a carbocation. Yeah,
Carbocation.
it's like a temporary vacancy.
Okay.
And the nucleophile eventually comes in to fill the spot, so it's a two-step process.
I see. So it's like the halogen exits stage left, leaving an opening for the nucleophile to take its place.
Yeah, exactly.
But why would one type of reaction happen over the other? It seems like SN2 is more straightforward.
Well, your chapter mentions a few key factors that kind of determine whether the reaction goes the SN1 route or the SN2 route.
Okay.
Things like the structure of the alkyl halide. Remember, like how crowded it is around that carbon halogen bond? That matters a lot.
Okay.
And then there's also the strength of the nucleophile.
Okay.
Some are much more eager to react than others.
I see.
And even the solvent, the liquid environment where all of this is happening,
Right.
that can really sway things one way or the other.
So it's like a whole set of conditions that influence the molecular dance.
It is. It's like being a chemist choreographer.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, you're directing this molecular ballet to create new and useful molecules.
That's a fantastic analogy. It definitely makes it a lot less intimidating.
Good.
I'm starting to see how this like basic chemistry can be used to create things in the real world.
Yeah.
And speaking of real world applications, you mentioned Splenda earlier. Is that where this is all leading?
It is. It is. Splenda is a great example of how we can sort of tweak and manipulate these nucleophilic substitution reactions
Right.
to create something new.
Okay.
And remember how we said even small changes to a molecule can drastically change its properties?
Yeah.
Well, Splenda's sweetness comes from changing a sugar molecule using the principles we've been discussing.
Okay, now I'm really intrigued.
Yeah.
Tell me more about how they turn regular sugar into Splenda.
All right, well, think back to those nucleophilic substitution reactions.
Okay.
So in Splenda, they're basically swapping out some of the parts of a regular sugar molecule.
Okay.
They're replacing those friendly hydroxyl groups, the OH groups,
yeah,
with chlorine atoms.
Oh, wow.
It's like changing just a few ingredients in a recipe and getting a completely different taste.
So they're using the same chemistry we've been discussing to create Splenda. That's incredible. I can't wait to hear more about how that works.
Absolutely. And, you know, it just goes to show these reactions aren't just theoretical concepts. They're the driving force behind these innovations that really affect our everyday lives.
I love that, seeing how basic chemistry connects to the things that we use every day.
Yeah, me too.
It's really cool.
Absolutely. It's pretty cool, right? By swapping out those OH groups, those hydroxyl groups, for chlorine atoms, you essentially create a molecule that tricks our taste buds into thinking it's super sweet. But our bodies can't break it down.
Oh, wow.
So we get the taste,
yeah,
without the calories.
It's like a sweet illusion.
Exactly, a sweet illusion. And it all comes down to the subtle changes in the molecule shape and how it interacts with our taste receptors.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's really a perfect example of how understanding those tiny little details of molecular structure can lead to some really amazing practical applications.
That's mind-blowing.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier there were some factors that influence whether a reaction goes the SN1 or SN2 route.
Yeah.
Can you walk me through those?
Sure, of course.
Yeah.
One of the biggest factors is something called steric hindrance, which is a fancy way of saying how crowded it is around that carbon-halogen bond.
Okay.
So think of it like this. You're trying to fit a big, bulky piece of furniture through a narrow doorway.
Right.
It's not going to happen easily, right?
No.
Same thing for nucleophiles, trying to reach a carbon that's surrounded by a lot of other atoms or groups.
Okay, so if it's too crowded, that SN2 reaction, that direct attack, it's less likely to happen.
Less likely to happen, exactly.
Right.
And in those cases, the SN1 reaction, the one where the halogen leaves first,
right,
might be more favorable, even though it's a two-step process.
Okay, that makes sense. It's like taking a detour.
Exactly.
Okay, so the structure of the alkyl halide really matters.
Yeah.
Are there other factors at play too?
Absolutely. The strength of the nucleophile is another really important one.
Okay.
A strong nucleophile. It's like, imagine a determined shopper on Black Friday.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to miss their target, right?
Whoa.
Whereas weaker nucleophiles are a bit more hesitant, a bit less reactive.
So a strong nucleophile would favor the SN2 reaction.
Yeah.
Because it can just barge in and make that direct attack.
Exactly. Yeah. It's much more likely to go for that direct attack.
Okay.
And the solvent also plays a crucial role.
Okay.
Think of it like the stage setting for a molecular dance.
Right.
Some solvents, they're like a crowded dance floor.
Yeah.
Making it hard for those molecules to move around and interact. Whereas other solvents are like a wide open space.
Okay.
Plenty of room to maneuver.
So the solvent can influence how easily the molecules can come together to react?
Exactly. And so, for example, polar product solvents like water or alcohols,
mm-hmm,
they tend to favor SN1 reactions because they can stabilize that carbocation intermediate.
Right, that positively charged carbon?
Yes, exactly, making that two-step process more likely.
So it's like the solvent is providing a supportive environment?
Yes.
For that SN1 reaction to occur.
That's a great way to put it. And then on the other hand, we have polar product solvents like acetone.
No, no.
Remember acetone?
Yeah, that was the nail polish remover, right?
Exactly. That's the nail polish remover. Yeah.
Okay.
They tend to favor SN2 reactions because they don't interfere as much with the nucleophile's approach.
Ah, okay.
So it allows it to make that direct attack much more easily.
This is all making so much sense. It's like each factor plays a role in determining which dance the molecules will choose.
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. And understanding these factors is essential for chemists when they're trying to, you know, design specific reactions.
Right.
Create new molecules. It's like having this toolbox full of different tools, each with its own unique purpose.
Okay. So we've covered steric hindrance,
yep,
nucleophile strength,
yep,
and solvent effects.
Huh?
Are there any other major players in this whole molecular drama?
Well, there's one more important factor that we need to consider, and that's the leaving group.
Right.
Remember, that's the atom or group that gets kicked out during the substitution reaction.
Yeah, the one that says, see ya.
Yeah, exactly. That's like a gracious guest that knows when it's time to leave the party.
Exactly. But are all leaving groups created equal?
Not quite.
Okay.
Some are better at leaving than others.
Okay.
And it really comes down to how stable they are after they depart.
Okay.
Because you see, when a leaving group leaves, it often takes on a negative charge.
Okay.
And a good leaving group is one that can handle that negative charge without causing too much trouble.
So it's like, you know, some people are better at handling breakups than others.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Some move on gracefully, and others they might create a scene.
Exactly. And just like in relationships, you know, a clean break makes the whole process smoother.
Right.
And in chemistry, a stable leaving group means a faster reaction.
Okay, so I'm starting to appreciate how even, like, these seemingly small details can have a big impact on these reactions.
Yeah, it really can.
Is there anything else about leaving groups that I should know?
Well, the chapter mentions that iodide and bromide ions, they're generally good leaving groups.
Okay.
While fluoride ions are not as good.
Okay.
And it has to do with how big the atom is and how well it can spread out that negative charge.
So size and stability matter.
Exactly.
Okay.
And this all ties back to the predictability of these reactions. You know, chemists can use their knowledge of these leaving groups to design reactions that are going to proceed smoothly and efficiently.
Like a blueprint.
Like a blueprint, yeah, for building new molecules.
I love it.
It's pretty cool stuff.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
Alkyl halides.
Yes.
Nucleophiles, SN1 and SN2 reactions.
Uh-huh.
All the factors that influence those reactions.
Yeah.
I'm starting to feel like I could actually hold my own in an organic chemistry class now.
That's great. That's the goal, right?
Yeah. It's definitely less intimidating than I thought.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that.
And all of this understanding leads us to some remarkable applications, like the creation of Splenda.
Yeah. 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 Right. Which we touched on earlier.
Yeah.
I'm still amazed that they use this chemistry to create a sweetener that's, what, hundreds of times sweeter than sugar?
Yeah.
But doesn't have that same caloric impact.
Yeah, it's a testament to the power of organic synthesis, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not just about making things sweeter. These reactions are essential for so many things, like developing new medicines, creating advanced materials, all sorts of things.
So this is way bigger than Splenda.
Way bigger, yeah. For example, nucleophilic substitution reactions are used extensively in drug discovery, you know? Many drugs target specific proteins in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Those proteins are often modified through, that's right, nucleophilic substitution. Reactions.
So by understanding these reactions, scientists can design drugs that interact with our bodies in very specific ways.
Precisely. It's like having a molecular key that unlocks a specific door in our cells.
And it's not just limited to pharmaceuticals, you know. These reactions are also used in material science to create polymers, plastics, other materials with very specific properties.
This is incredible. It sounds like these reactions are everywhere, like working behind the scenes to shape the world around us.
They are. They really are. And it all starts with that fundamental understanding of how nucleophiles and alkyl halides interact.
Wow. I'm starting to see how even seemingly complex chemistry can have a huge impact on our everyday lives.
Yeah, it's all connected.
And speaking of impact, I'm curious about those biological processes you mentioned earlier, like methylation.
Oh, yeah.
What role do these nucleophilic substitution reactions play in those?
Oh, that's a great question. Methylation, it's a fascinating process. It's essential for so many things, from DNA replication to regulating gene expression, even fighting off infections.
Oh, wow.
And guess what? It often involves those same SN2 reactions we've been talking about.
Really? So the same reactions that are used to make Splenda are happening inside of our bodies right now?
That's right, happening all the time.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so in methylation, you have a methyl group that's a CH3 group.
Yeah.
It gets transferred from one molecule to another.
Mm-hmm.
And this transfer often occurs through an SN2 mechanism.
So it's like a molecular dance is happening in our cells.
Yes.
With these methyl groups getting passed around like batons in a relay race.
That's a great analogy. I like that.
Yeah.
And these methylation reactions are critical. They keep our bodies functioning properly.
Right.
They're involved in everything from controlling cell growth and development to influencing how our genes are expressed.
Wow.
It's pretty remarkable.
So this seemingly simple chemistry,
it's
actually at the heart of incredibly complex and important biological processes.
Exactly. Really highlights the connection between chemistry and biology, you know?
Right.
What we learn in the lab can often shed light on what's happening inside living organisms and vice versa.
That's amazing.
It's really cool.
It's mind-boggling to think about this vast network of chemical reactions that are constantly taking place within us, keeping us alive and functioning.
It really is. And it all goes back to those fundamental principles of organic chemistry. You know, those molecular dances we've been exploring today.
This deep dive has been incredibly eye-opening.
Glad to hear it.
I'm starting to see the world around me in a whole new light.
That's awesome.
Recognizing the invisible chemistry that's at work everywhere.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, it really makes you appreciate the elegance and complexity of the world at a molecular level.
It does. And, you know, this whole deep dive into nucleophilic reactions has reminded me of something I find fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
The way that scientists are using this knowledge to develop new catalysts.
Oh, catalysts. Those are the substances that speed up chemical reactions, right?
Exactly. Like the catalytic converters in cars.
Right.
Help clean up exhaust fumes.
Exactly.
Well, it turns out that a lot of catalysts actually work by facilitating nucleophilic substitution reactions. They provide a sort of shortcut, you know, for these molecular dances to occur, making reactions happen faster and more efficiently.
So it's like they're choreographing the reactions,
right,
making sure the right partners meet at the right time.
Exactly. And this has huge implications for, you know, everything from developing more sustainable manufacturing processes
mm-hmm.
to creating new materials with, you know, just incredible properties.
Wow, that's amazing. It seems like we've only just scratched the surface of what's possible with these reactions.
We really have.
Yeah.
And that's what makes organic chemistry so exciting.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's a field that's constantly evolving with new discoveries being made all the time. And who knows what incredible applications we'll find in the future.
Right. I can't wait to find out. So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's recap what we've learned.
Okay.
We started by exploring alkyl halides, those molecules, with a halogen atom attached to a carbon.
Right.
And we learn how they're kind of the starting point for this whole array of nucleophilic substitution reactions.
That's right.
Then we delved into those intricacies of the SN1 and SN2 mechanisms, understanding how those reactions proceed step by step, and how factors like steric hindrance, nucleophile strength, the solvent leaving group ability can influence which pathway the reaction takes.
Absolutely.
And we even uncovered the sweet secret behind Splenda.
That's right.
Realizing that this everyday sweetener is a testament to the power of organic synthesis to transform molecules in some really remarkable ways.
And we even talk about how these reactions play a vital role in biological processes.
Right.
Like methylation that influences gene expression, DNA replication, and even the development of targeted drugs.
Yeah.
Interact with specific proteins in our bodies.
Wow. It's been an incredible journey
it's
through the world of nucleophilic reactions
also
from like the basic concepts to their real world applications.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, I'm feeling a lot less intimidated by organic chemistry now.
I'm glad to hear that. It's a fascinating field, you know, full of surprises and endless possibilities.
Before we sign off, I want to thank you so much for guiding us through this complex topic.
You're welcome.
With such clarity and enthusiasm.
It'd be my pleasure.
And to our listeners, we encourage you to keep exploring.
Yes.
Keep questioning. Keep diving deeper.
Absolutely.
Into this fascinating world of chemistry.
Yeah, you never know what you might discover.
Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.